and welcome to another episode of Mormon History Podcast. This is your host, Skyler. Welcome to another episode. One of my earliest episodes that I did was called Should I Stay or Should I Go? And I discussed the various reasons why someone might stay in the church or someone might leave the church. I used an example of marriage and how some people stay in a marriage for various reasons and some people exit marriage for various reasons. And so this episode kind of ties into that. However, you will notice that this one is titled Why I Left. Spoiler alert. So yes, I did leave the church, as in the fact that I resigned from the church and am no longer considered a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And you might be wondering, well, was it because of the CES letter? Was it something you learned? Why would you leave the church? Is it because you wanted to sin? The answer is yes, I wanted to sin. No, I'm just kidding. So it's a long story, which is going to be a podcast episode. Like all good stories, they start long ago. And so I want to talk about my upbringing a little bit as a way for people to get to know me, I guess. I was born of goodly parents, much like the person named Nephi in the Book of Mormon. My parents are LDS, their parents are LDS, their parents are LDS, and all the way back to Joseph Smith. I've got ancestors on all sorts of sides who were around at the time of Joseph Smith and the beginning of this whole shindig. So naturally, growing up in a Mormon religion, there's a lot of things that are asked of you. There's a lot of different processes and steps that you go through as a member, including the scouting program, duty to God, getting your Eagle Scout, going on a mission, getting the priesthood, everything. In the early years, ages 4 to around 11, I grew up in Southern California. I was persecuted for being Mormon. There were people that weren't allowed to play with us because we were Mormon. And so being Mormon was unique. It was something that was special. Around the age of 11, we moved to St. George, Utah, Southern Utah. And everyone is basically a Mormon, and so it's less persecuted, it's less of an issue. You just have some people that are maybe more rebellious. The people whose parents force them to be members of the church and to actually go on Sunday. The people who will purposely get a job and work on Sunday so that they don't have to go to church. I lived in Southern Utah in the 90s until I went on my mission in 1999. I got called to the Spokane, Washington Spanish-speaking mission, and I served from 2000 to 2002. When I got back from my mission, my parents had moved back to California, and so I lived there for 6 months, and then I decided to move to Las Vegas, Nevada to go to massage therapy school, and moved there in January of 2003. So now you're back to a place where there's still a lot of members, but yet there's a majority who are non-members of the church. And I wasn't really persecuted per se, but there were obviously people who would question you about your beliefs all the time and want to know why you're a member and try to convert you either to their religion or away from religion altogether. As I said in one of the earlier episodes, I really started getting into church history even while on my mission. But it was getting back from my mission where I really started to enjoy the deep dive conversations, the meat theological discussions at church and things like that. The whole milk, love your neighbor, Jesus is great, do your home teaching, just the very light, fluffy stuff was always boring to me. And 2005, I got married in the Salt Lake Temple. And at the time, I was a police officer in Henderson, Nevada for a year. That didn't work out for me, and we moved back to northern Utah, where I have lived ever since. Now, I'll get into the marriage thing probably in a little bit. I'm trying to figure out how this episode's going to look, because I'm just, it's a raw episode. There's no script, no anything, no notes of any kind of order of operandi. I'm just kind of going off as I think about it. So as I continued studying church history, I obviously would come across things that were not very comfortable to know. Things like Joseph Smith's polygamy and polyandry, and quotes from, you know, people like Brigham Young. But I don't know that I put too much stock or emphasis into really knowing what to do with that information. It was more just knowledge. It was neither here nor there. It was just something that went to the filing cabinet in my brain. When it came to church history generally, I always used the mode initially of trying to gain an understanding of where these men or these people were coming from. So it's similar to the quote that the church historians are throwing around right now with the whole, the past is a foreign country, they do things differently there. I tried to utilize that in my life. I tried to look at what these people went through, who they were, why they believed what they believed, why they would say things they would say, and I truly tried to understand it. After many years, I really couldn't take that approach anymore, because I figured that if I was giving them the opportunity to be forgiven so easily of such hatred and vile stuff, then I wasn't really looking at the operations of a God and how him and his son would lead an only true church. So I think what you're going to think now is, okay, so you left because the church wasn't true in that sense, or because historically you found things in it that you didn't like. The answer is actually no, that's not why I left. Going back to my marriage, I will briefly touch on the fact that I am completing a divorce at the moment. So the papers have been signed. The judge is just waiting for his signature to finalize the divorce. I'm not divorced because of issues with the church or church history. But as I evaluated my life, as I evaluated and went through the different stages, I realized how unhappy I was in the sense of staying in something that wasn't right. And it's not because I did anything wrong, and it's not because my wife did anything wrong, but just realizing that it wasn't right. And that's all I will say about that, because I don't want that to be the focus of this, and I'm not going to say anything negative about myself or her when it comes to our marriage and the 13 years that we were married. But around that same time, you'll recall, maybe, I believe I talked about it, about my son turning 8 and wanting to be baptized. So he had turned 8 in October of 2017. And I started having conversations with the bishop and stake president regarding the ability to baptize my son. And I was the young men's president for, I think, a year and a half. And then we had a bishop at the time, and I asked him to be released. And that's when I started going more through the self-authority stage, where I realized, you know, I don't need you to tell me how much to pay in tithing or what I can or can't eat or drink when none of it's being followed anyways. There's people who avoid coffee and tea, but then they just drink soda and eat Big Macs and chili cheese fries every day. And also knowing what Joseph Smith and Oliver Cowdery, Martin Harris, all these other guys, how they lived, it was kind of funny that we're following something that they really didn't follow themselves, or at least it was constructed in a way that was different. So this bishop was released after I resigned from being the young men's president, and a new bishop was called, and also a new stake president was called. So there was a new bishop and a new stake president at the same time. Well, I started having conversations with the new bishop about baptizing my son and how I don't have a temple recommend and I can't answer the temple recommend questions in a black or white manner with a yes or no. This became 6 months of conversations with the bishop as well as the stake president about different varying subjects of church history, and each question particularly on why I can't answer yes or no, but why I feel like I still should be able to baptize and confirm my son a member with the quote-unquote authority I have. And it just became a big, like I said, 6 months of it not going anywhere. I didn't have a problem being a member of the church in a sense when it came to truth claims. I didn't believe that the church was the only true and living church of Jesus Christ. I don't believe that there is one. And whether or not there is a heaven or hell, whether or not there is an anthropomorphic being called God, I don't know. And I was fine being a member in the sense of it being a community of people that can discuss theological things sometimes, as well as that it was my tribe, as Bill Real often calls it. But what I refused to do was to remain a member in an organization in which I couldn't participate fully with the knowledge that I have about the organization. And so as I continued to meet with the stake president and the bishop and it getting nowhere, but me teaching them things about church history and things that they should know and that this should help you to be able to discuss things with people as they come in, I realized that I was standing in the way of my son being baptized because I was not going to be able to participate fully with my knowledge. So in April of 2018, I submitted my resignation from the church and was officially removed on April 6th of 2018, which is obviously the church's birth of organization. So that was kind of neat, I guess, for me, if something was neat about it. And I went to my son's baptism in April, the end of April, he was baptized. And I've gone to I think one other event, like the primary program recently. But other than that, I haven't gone to church. So there has been a lot of changes for me, and that's partly the reason why I haven't been releasing any new episodes, is because I was kind of in a temporary place renting while my divorce was being finalized. And also, I think when you remove yourself from the organization, sometimes you can lack the motivation to want to talk about it anymore. I think Bill Real, I don't want to speak for Bill Real, but I think Bill Real is tired, or he's getting tired of talking about it. And obviously there's people that are tired of Bill Real talking about it. Not me. But I do feel like there's so much to still talk about. And I want to talk about it. Now, a lot of you, maybe I should rephrase that, some of you may not want to listen to my podcast anymore because you now know that I'm no longer a member, and you think, well, maybe he's just going to be critical of it. And while I did have, I guess, some critical tones a few episodes ago, I feel like I've been fairly consistent with providing interesting information that has never been pro-Mormon or what I would consider anti-Mormon. It's just interesting facts about Mormonism. And obviously, the things that are probably more interesting tend to be a little more scandalous anyways. I mean, anyone can go and read the Joseph Smith papers and read the stuff that's there, but there's not a lot of people that can read redacted information and uncover redacted information. It's just clearly that's going to be more interesting. But I don't spend as much time as I used to spend researching Mormonism and Mormon history. And so how much can I put out when it comes to podcasting on Mormonism if I'm not putting a lot of effort into Mormonism? And that's the question, and that's where I'm at. I still have a lot of information that I've researched and written down that I want to cover. There's a lot of it is more of a thought or a wonder. Like things like, for instance, a journal entry where Brigham Young is requesting the signature of Joseph Smith. And then finding a document that has Joseph Smith's signature cut out of it and a note saying that Brigham Young requested it. And so to me, I'm like, okay, why would Brigham Young want Joseph Smith's signature unless he wanted to forge a document and say it was signed by Joseph Smith? Like, I don't get it. I don't get why else would someone want someone else's signature unless they were going to utilize it in a nefarious way? And so I have stuff written down that I go, yeah, that's interesting. Or, you know, one of the prophets talking about Nephite coins and showing it around to different people. Like, that's just interesting to me, but maybe it's not enough yet for a story. And so I have to spend time on hunting down more resources or tracking stuff down. And so I don't know. How much effort do I want to put into doing that? And that's where I'm at, and that's where I need feedback from you guys on if you want me to continue to do podcasting. Is this podcast, Mormon History Podcast, is it beneficial in any way to anybody? Or am I just doing this to hear the sound of my own voice? Because there are other podcasts that I am interested in doing that are not Mormon specific that are not tied to Mormonism. Because I don't think I have a horrible podcasting voice and I have the know-how of recording a podcast. But if there's not excitement for people to hear Mormon History Podcast, is there really a reason to continue to do it? So, if you want me to continue to do podcasting as Mormon History Podcast, comment on this episode on the MormonDiscussions.org webpage, or send me an email at MormonHistoryPodcast@gmail.com, or hit me up on Facebook, Skylar Francis, and let me know if this podcast is helping you, if you just enjoy listening to random Mormon history, because I will continue if there's enough people that are interested in hearing me discuss Mormonism and finding the interesting Mormon stories. If not, I will just take it elsewhere and do something else, or, you know, maybe do it every so often. But I would like to have a voice out there and put out information if people are truly interested and if people truly enjoy this podcast. But I'm not going to know that unless you reach out and let me know that I should continue. Or, you know what, you can just tell me that I suck and I should stop and we'll put that vote for the other side. But I wanted to release this episode as a raw type of an episode to just let you know where I've been, what's been going on, and why I haven't been posting as much. And why I might feel the need to be a little critical, maybe, when it comes to future episodes. Because I don't have any reason to lift the church up, per se. I don't hate the church. I don't agree with a lot of things that they've done, especially recently. But this podcast has always been a more safer, edgier podcast when it comes to history. And I've also tried to talk about things that really haven't been talked about as much, or finding things that are more interesting or obscure. And so that's where I think I show some kind of benefit for the Mormon history podcasting community, because I'm not just talking about all the same stories that other podcasters are discussing. But it's not that that's an issue. I like listening to Naked Mormonism. I like listening to Bill Reel's podcasts and other Mormon podcasts that discuss those topics, and that's fine. That's great. But I wanted to always be the person who maybe provided some more obscure things that aren't just always discussed. So anyways, give me some feedback. Again, that's MormonHistoryPodcast@gmail.com, or look me up at Skylar Francis in Facebook. I also have the Mormon History Podcast Facebook profile, as well as the MormonDiscussion.org page. You can also leave comments on this episode. But that's where I'm at. So let me know. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Mormon History Podcast. I can't leave you hanging on the outro music. So thank you for listening. And like always, see you next time.